This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
BTBN Play.
Soul in the mind. If you wanna test me, I'll show you fine. The things I'll teach you, be sure to beat you. Nevertheless, you'll get a lesson from teacher. Now kick,
kick,
punch,
punch,
jump,
tap,
block,
block.
Once more, now kick,
kick.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of PTBN Plays. Jordan and I looking here at our top four games here, and today we are going to be talking about the Sony PlayStation, and again, this is on the PTBN Pop feed, and we are working our way chronologically through the consoles that we have played in our earliest memories here, starting at the Atari 2600 all the way through to adulthood, because we are adults. And so, Jordan, how are you today, sir? Let me bring you in here.
Well, to prove that I'm an adult, we are starting our recording a little late because I was at the chiropractor today. You might wonder, what did I do to cause such pain? I slept wrong on the couch, Brad.
Okay. You know, that happens.
Visit.
That happens. The, that's... How long has that ailment been bothering you now?
Just a couple days. I actually had the I was supposed to go in on Monday, and I just got bumped up to Thursday. And to add even more, I fell asleep reading a book.
Okay.
So, really proving my adulthood right now.
Well, that happens. I mean, you know, they used to say that growing up. Is like, oh, read a book before bed. And as an adult, if I try to do that, I fall asleep pretty quick. Usually, I fall asleep on the couch with my laptop on my lap. Fortunately, I have a cushion, a stand, and I have it on sitting, so it's not directly burning my crotch, but it's still right. Like, oh wow, I just slept with this for 3 hours on this. That's good.
You are definitely putting at risk carrying on your family name,
though. And I already have, so actually that's okay. It can do whatever it wants, you know. We'll try to, you know, no illnesses or anything like that to spawn out of the of this. And real quick for. Again, too, so being 39, just like you, you know, and with back injuries like that, you know, once you get them once, it only takes that once. I remember about 13 years ago, 12 years ago, playing wiffle ball on a hill and, like, you know, drinking beers. It was like a work party. And, you know, you're at an angle. Like, we were playing on a hill. It was dumb. And I hurt my back so bad later on that night, like I had spasms. And then since then is like, you know, you bend over and pull something up and it comes right back. It only has to happen once and then you're triggered forever. So
is it sad that I also have a wiffle ball injury that lingers from time to time?
I mean, no.
We did an event at our church once, and it was like with the teenagers, and we had this big wiffle ball tournament, and I was designated the pitcher. And so I pitched probably 40 innings of wiffle ball throughout a day, and I think I developed tendonitis from that specific day. To this day, I'll get tennis elbow or whatever you call it. Here and there, it'll flare up, but that's where it first happened. So.
Nothing cute. You know, all these people complain about pitch counts nowadays.
And I know, I pitched 40 innings.
40 innings of wiffle ball.
That's why Verlander left Detroit. He heard about my tail, and he's like, well, I can't top that. Better go somewhere else.
I mean, that's an incredible story. Yeah. There's no cumulative damage. It was just one outing.
I will say that most innings, we had a rule: if you batted through the lineup, the inning ended. There was very few innings where I got three outs.
Right, sure.
I pitched to a lot of batters that day.
You know, I remember it. You know, I was in sandals. And again, so you've got this odd position because I think
proper footwear.
Proper footwear. You're wrenching your back already to take these mighty swings because you're showing off to whoever. And, you know, that's how it happens, man. I don't think I've ever been in as much pain as that. I remember, like, laying on my floor just, like, pulling my knees up and, like, it was excruciating trying to stretch it out. It took quite a few times. I haven't had back spasms. When you see, like, athletes that go out because of that, that is no joke. There are some joke injuries, but that one, spasms, is not. That's like being electric shocked, like in your back randomly.
It's awful.
It is awful. And that was Old Man Chat, and we will see you next time on. No, we're going to go back today. We're going back to the late 90s. And Jordan, we have moved past 16-bit now.
Yep.
We are into the 32-bit / 64-bit era here.
It's never going to get better than this, right?
Well, whew, we thought so at the time. So why don't we start out, and I will I have a pretty big connection to this console, actually. So, sure. You know, on the Super Nintendo one, that was kind of yours, and we kind of – I had the Genesis more so. But the PlayStation was really a big one for me. So I'm going to let you start and talk about how it played into your life, and then we will go into our top four.
Sure. So it's funny. Before we came on the air, we were talking about this a little bit, and I said that this is probably the list that was toughest for me in the sense that I had the least connection to the PlayStation. And it's not because I think it's a bad system or anything like that. And I was trying to think, like, why is this list so hard for me? And I kind of tried to put myself in the time frame. And it's simply just because I got it at the wrong time. You know, I got a N64 before I got a PlayStation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I didn't have a PlayStation 1 for a real long time before I believe we got the Dreamcast or something else. I can't really exactly remember. But, yeah, the PlayStation came out in, like, 95. I didn't get it until, I think, 97, I want to say.
Okay, yeah.
Senior year of high school. So I had the N64 for almost a full year before that. And so that's maybe where my affinity lies when we're talking about this generation, when we get to our N64 episode. Sure. And it's not that I think the PlayStation 1's bad or anything. You just don't – we're talking about defining games.
Right.
And there's not a lot here for me. There's one. My number one is definitely a game that I will gush over. But I think it's a good system. What I love about PlayStation, and I'm a Sony guy, is I think with the four PlayStations, each one has been better than the next.
Sure.
I'm a huge fan, and not just in terms of specs, in terms of what they look like. I think actual gameplay. I really believe that the PlayStation 4 might be my favorite system of all time. And that might be recency bias because it's what I play right now, but at the same time, nostalgia bias bumps others up, and it still, you know, doesn't really compare to PS4. But we'll get to the PS4 down the road.
Yes.
It's interesting. You know, it's as we talked before we got on the air, PS1 for me is maybe a blind spot, so to speak, whereas you said... you hold it in very high regard. So let's hear your story.
Yeah, so I had I talked before on kind of always being years behind the trend. And so PlayStation was where I finally caught up, kind of. And we're going to talk a little bit of kind of the parallels to Sega with it. Because so PlayStation came out in the fall of 1995. And again, so we're 15 years old at the time. No one was buying this overpriced console. I remember... at a Super Bowl party in 1996, it was the Steelers Cowboys, that my friend Steve had brought his PlayStation. So he had had it, and he brought like NFL Game Day and NHL Face Off. And we were like, whoa, this is really cool. But at the time, I was still playing Genesis. You know, I was still playing Madden 96. Right. I was like playing PC and playing NBA games on DOS, you know, so like that was I wasn't ready quite for PlayStation. And then Nintendo 64 came out, like you said, and I remember playing that and my friends kind of like leaning towards like graduation in 97. So I did not have one of those yet either, but again, I played at different friends' houses. And then when I went to school in the summer, did a couple classes at Penn State in the summer, I remember bringing my Genesis with me. It was kind of like the last hurrah for it, really. Sure. And then in the fall, I was doing a lot of PC stuff still, too. So it was kind of like the tail end of that for me. And then that Christmas in 97 is when I got a PlayStation. And so this was – so again, so it's like 2 years into the system. But really, when you think about like the great titles of the game – and there's one – something we're going to talk about that came ahead of time. But all the games on my list came out like starting in the fall of 97. And so, you know, I had a close friend that had a PlayStation. So I was playing it, too. But like some of the most defining games for the system overall – even in video games overall, came out during this time. So this was the tipping point. You know, it was that fall of 97 when Sony really made that push into the North American market. You saw their advertisements everywhere. You saw commercials for a game that's on my list on Comedy Central. And like all these big, and you're like, wow, like this game looks amazing. I really feel like that this was, you know, we saw marketing for Sonic. And we saw the Super Nintendo versus Genesis, but this was like individual games that were huge productions that you started to see. And those are on my list because they were defining for me. So I came in right as that was going on, and I kind of equated to also becoming a wrestling fan like in the Attitude Era. So there was wrestling before, but this is like coming into it at its peak popularity time, and I was kind of right in there for it. So,
well, we came out of the bingo halls. So
yes, yes. And so, and one of the things that this system appealed to me, or one of the connections I have to it was, is that I remember, so I did a lot of my playing of it in the spring of 1998, and in just those first couple months, I remember ordering a mod chip for it, right? So I remember sending a money order or a check, I think maybe it was a money order, in an envelope to Phoenix to get a $10 or $12 mod chip, which was then sent back to me in a normal business envelope, somehow not destroyed in the mail, right? Like weeks later, it's like you just sent it and you hoped it happened. And right. So it came back to me, and I remember my friend in my dorm room, you know, we took the PlayStation apart and he was like pretty handy and he soldered it in and it worked. And my buddy had a burner. Not everybody had, they were expensive back then. So it was fortunately I had a friend that had one and he also had a mod chip. So, and this is kind of where I started to learn kind of a life thing, which it's not particularly good, which is kind of like being paralyzed by choice, right? So being in college and having an incredibly fast internet speed, those were in demand too. So like, you know, I would share them with friends or acquaintances I had online, and that got me hooked up into pretty much like anything that came out I could download and then my buddy would burn. I spent a lot of my spending money at like BJ's or Sam's Club, I can't remember which one it was, like to get like those spindles of verbatim CDRs. And we would just burn PlayStation games. And I had books of them. And I'll tell you what, I mean, there were a handful that I played, but my memories and the ones that I'm talking about here actually were ones that I borrowed from like roommates. One of them's like neighbors down the hall. And so you had them and it was kind of like almost like I didn't have anything before, so now I have all these games. But I really still stuck to like a core group of them. And so that was kind of my experience with it. So I had a ton of options to play, but there were some games in there. So that was my system. And then we concurrently had like a Nintendo 64 then at home and stuff. And we'll talk certainly about that. I certainly feel connected to that system too. But that being college in there and having that up there at school with me. And again, look, if you're going to pick a time period in your life where you have the most spare time to dive into like productions of games that will change your life and how you approach video games, this is exactly when you want to do it, when you're 19 years old, you know, so.
And you have no obligations.
And you have no obligations except to maybe occasionally go to class, and that was optional, and I transferred anyway then. So it was, I just played a lot of PlayStation, guys. So anyway.
It's funny, you mentioned a mod chip. We had a local store that was just the coolest thing in the world. I didn't have to mail away or anything. I had a guy who, he sold imports. He sold Japanese imports, and
he would put them
in right there. It's called GameSpot.
Oh, okay, not to be confused. Sure, sure.
Right, yeah. So I wish he was still around, but they went out of business a few years back. So, but I got a few Japanese games. They won't make my list, but I had a couple All Japan wrestling games.
Oh, nice.
I don't know even what he did, but he made them workable for me. So
nice.
I think we all have stories like that, too, for those of us who've been gaming long enough to,
sure.
You know, that friend who knew how to get the games that you couldn't really get.
Well, so. And they came out earlier in Japan, too. So I remember, you know, we talked about it a little bit last time when we talked about the Saturn, but I remember playing like X-Men versus Street Fighter, but it was the Japanese version, and we played the hell out of it. So I never played the US version because I had essentially like played it enough.
Finished, yeah.
And that was one that I did have a copy of, and I played the heck out of that game, and essentially finished right. And that came out, well, some of this stuff used to come out like 5 months earlier, you know, in Japan. So
Well, the system itself came out, I mean, not a full year, but. Almost, right? I mean, like, late 94, whereas in North America we got it in 95, but it was almost the end of 95.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we're talking 7-8 months they had it out before.
Well, they've been working on it for a while, or different permutations of it. And you can hear that story. It may even be in that Console Wars, kind of the famous Nintendo-Sony relationship, and then Nintendo not liking the deal because Sony, it was a pretty good deal for Sony. And they went with Philips, which is a terrible idea, and it actually really hurt Nintendo for a long time. And even still today is kind of like, it's a good story to read about. You can find that online. And kind of it would be interesting in today's media climate to see something like that happen, where they go on stage like they don't know about it, and Nintendo announces like another partnership with someone. So when they were supposed to be announcing something else, so it's quite the screw job as it would go into be. But So
I will also say, hang on, before we get going, I also have handy the list of the top-selling games for the PlayStation 1.
That was a fun little thing. That was a fun look last time. Yeah. I think my list is going to be a mark list in the sense that a lot of my games are going to be up there.
Number one surprised me. I will say that. Number one was a surprise.
I'm curious. All right. Well, let's get started. We'll go in. So again, we're going to do our top four, and then we will talk about honorable mentions afterwards.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'll get things started because I don't think I have as much to say about each game. My number four is a game that I already spoke previously about, like Earthworm Jim, and how I kind of liked the irreverency of it and the uniqueness of the character. I also liked like Toe Jam and Earl. And so I went with a game called Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey. Are you familiar with this one?
I am familiar with this one, yeah. Okay. I did play a little bit of the first one.
Yeah, this is a game that I had that I really enjoyed. It was a puzzler, and I think I remember it mostly because of the character of Abe. And I almost feel like at the time, trying to remember back, you know, with Sega you had Sonic, but there was that Toe Jam and Earl were kind of like the B-team, you know? And I think with PlayStation they tried with Crash Bandicoot to be their Sonic, and Abe was like their B-team guy, you know? But Oddworld is a simple game. Abe is, he's kind of like an alien-type little goblin, I don't even know what he was. But he's basically a slave who is trying to get free, which is his odyssey. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzler game, kind of like a side scrolling type, figure out how to get through the area.
Yeah, I would call it like a puzzle platformer.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. It was pretty difficult too.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the first games I thought of when I thought about PlayStation 1, which is interesting because I never completed it. I never played any of the sequels. Yet this specific one, Abe's Odyssey, maybe it was one of the first games that I got, I don't really know, but I remember very specific things about it, which is odd, because like he was in the meat processing factory, that's where he was a slave, so you could hurl meat at people and stuff like that, and I also remember he had kind of like some sort of telepathy where you could take control of other players, and that was kind of necessary in order to you know, get through the puzzles.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I couldn't remember it, but I remember it being something like that, so that was it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I remember those different things again, so it was kind of like, how do I get through this screen? And it was pretty challenging.
Yeah, it was a frustrating game, too. You know, like, to go back to that mind control thing, you're controlling someone's mind, you're moving things along, and then there's just these little random orbs that will just zap you, and it just undo everything, and oh, that was so frustrating. But Abe's Odyssey is a game that I think speaks exactly to my knowledge of PlayStation 1 and my connection to it, whereas, oh, this was a fun game, and I remember this, but I don't love it. If I were to make a top 10 games of all systems, this would be nowhere near it.
Right.
And yet, somehow it's wound up number 4 on my PlayStation list, and it was a pretty successful game. I kind of thought it was maybe a game that only I'd known about, but yet I looked at that best-selling list, and it's in there.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe it's just one of those things that I thought that I discovered.
Right.
Really, everybody else knew it too. You know. But yeah, it was a fun game. This is what I go to you for. Do you know like who made this game? Who developed this game?
Oh, man, like, I do not off the top of my head, but I remember it got a pretty good push. So, and I think it got a good review in IGN, because back then IGN was like the place to get like a rating for.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember advertisements for it, and then it got a pretty good review, because I remember when it came out, it was one like I sought out to play. And I actually even still remember, because it coincides with like WWF Attitude in 99. Like, I remember like playing both of them like back to back, like at my house. So it was just like a weird memory that just came to me. But like, that was the other game to it. So, and it's had a lot of sequels, and I've never played any of them. Sometimes I'll get them like cheap on like PSN or something, because like, you know, they put PS1 games out there, and I've never played any of them. I have no interest in kind of revisiting it, because puzzle platformers, like, admittedly is not my favorite genre. But it definitely spawned off some stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is a game that I think I would like to revisit, just because it's a game that I remember really liking. But when I sit down and think, okay, what did I like about it? It's hard for me to remember much about it besides Abe, the character. Like, I don't remember the main villain. I don't remember the bad guys' names. I'd have to look all that up. I mean, I'm sure we could just Google it and find all that stuff. But yeah, it was a well received game too. You know, as we're checking up on it, IGN gave it good ratings. GamePro, GameSpot, Game Informer. There's a lot of game things back then. Yes. Whereas now it's kind of really, what's the game, the magazine you get with GameStop now?
That's about
the
only one that's
left. Yeah, that's about the only one that's left.
That's the only one that's left because of that tie-in that they have, yep.
Side note, my go-to was probably EGM, Electronic Gaming
Monthly. Okay, yeah, sure.
But I don't have a lot of depth to talk about Oddworld other than it's a game that I think of when I think of the PlayStation, which we're not ranking the best games, we're ranking the defining games. Yeah. So if that's one of the first that pops in my mind, there's a reason for it. So
great choice. So my number four is Parappa the Rapper.
Oh, okay.
And cool. So this was, I think technically, and I've seen it in different places kind of referred to as really the first rhythm game, right? So like I like Guitar Hero, mm-hmm. and this game was, you know, it was so unique, right? And it was a kind of singing button mashing along with trying to match the patterns and stay in tune. And you were, and it was, it was a rhythm game. And so it had incredible characters. And I remember playing like the demo. This was back then too, where you get like demo discs
demo
that
discs,
had multiple games on them. And I remember playing the demo of this game and like really loving it. And like, you know, I was into music and stuff, so I was, you know, pretty good at it. And, I remember beating the demo, and then this was one game I do remember kind of playing. I just don't remember how far I got in it when I initially played it, but I always had like a really strong affinity to it. And so when they, you're going one-on-one against these different instructors, and they're singing these wacky songs, and the music is really cool, really, really cool. And you're just trying to kind of, you know, match their beats along with it, and then you do bad, it's like Guitar Hero where like you start getting into like the red and then you'll fail and have to restart. So mm-hmm. We're all familiar with kind of the mechanics of the game now, but back then this was brand new. And yep. So it was really cool. And they I played the 20th anniversary re-release came out last year, and I got it for PS4, and so it was an HD upgrade, but the cutscenes were still like the original, like compressed, like 480 PS1 one. So that was like, you know, some people complained about that, or they thought there was lag or whatever. But I loved it, and I beat it. And there is a level in there, and people, if you're familiar with the game, they're going to nod along and say, so it's the cluck cluck chicken level, mm-hmm. where she comes out, and it probably took me 60 times to beat, like over multiple nights of trying and failing. And it is easily the hardest level in the game. You'll find like people to be like, they never got past it. Once I finally beat it, like the last two levels were cake, and I beat the game like in the same sitting, no problem. But this was like one of the hardest beats to follow along to, and it was so. And it could have been some of the lag too. I don't know. I was pretty proud of myself for going back and actually beating the game. And then after I had done that, I actually on the PS3 they released those PS1 classics, and Jammer Lammy was made by the same people. It was like a spiritual successor. Parappa's in it, but it's the girl, and she's like the guitarist. So it's her story, and you follow along, and I beat that game too.
I've never played that one. Okay.
Yeah, Jammer Lammy. It is just as quirky and over-the-top as the first one. Actually, it's even worse. Some of the songs are so weird, and some of the guys you go against are so weird. But then that kind of segues into Parappa the Rapper 2, which was a PS2 game, and I didn't play that at the time. But that was definitely my number four, one of the defining games for me. Did you ever play Parappa?
I did. That was actually one of my honorable mentions, because I think this is another game that I think you think of with PlayStation 1 for sure. Just for the visuals alone, it was kind of like a Paper Mario type look.
Yep,
Or actually, I would think more like South Park almost. You know, like...
Yep, 2D on top of like a 3D background.
Yeah, like almost like construction paper design, you know. But yeah, it's a fun game. I'm always a sucker for games that have some like fun to it, you know, like comedy and things. I mean, that's what video games are supposed to be, is fun. There's actually a game I'll talk about a little later that I love, but the legacy of it has kind of turned me off, you know. But, I mean, video games are supposed to be fun. End of story, you know. And I think sometimes people get so caught up in the look and the presentation, and they forget, is this game actually fun to play and fun to enjoy? Parappa the Rapper is one of the first games to that I think you wouldn't mind sitting and watching other people play.
For sure. Or you can hand the controller back and forth. It didn't really... Yeah. Yep. That's a great point.
And Parappa's a guy, too. He, like I mentioned, Abe, where it's almost like PlayStation was trying to find their character. Like, Nintendo had Mario and Sega had Sonic. I think Parappa they maybe tried a little bit with.
Yeah, he got a good push.
Yeah, he's in... they made a game a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It was like PlayStation's version of Super Smash Brothers, the All-Star. And he's in that.
Yep, he is.
You know, you can be Parappa there. So, I think they did eventually find their character, which is not on PlayStation 1, but I think they found it in the guy from Little Big Planet. I think that's the Sony character to me. I don't even know what his name is, but so maybe they didn't find it. But you know what I'm talking about. Sackboy, that's his name.
Sackboy, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they had multiple ones, right? But that's a great point, because him as a character, it kind of... Look, they're building a brand. This is their first console release, right? They're coming into a market where Sega, who was floundering with the Saturn, and Nintendo, you know, they came in and they were kind of, it was kind of like they were pushing multiple people at a time. And he was, and again, this is that fall 97 is when it came out. It was a really big booming period for them, and they were killing it sales wise. I'd be curious where this one ranked on your list. For sales.
Let's see if we can find Parappa the Rapper on there. Gosh, this is... Oh, number 59. Wow, not that big, actually. They sold over a million copies, which I guess is nothing to sneeze at, but I would have guessed much higher.
And I'll kind of conclude with, you know, nowadays, with how games are produced, and you're talking AAA titles that are hundreds of millions of dollars, this game would be like a $15 PSN release, or a $20 PSN release, but back then, it was pretty cheap to stamp a game on a CDR, right? Yeah. And so, like, we were still in, and we're going to have it for a couple more years, where you were still in the, like, wow, like, this is really weird, but somebody wanted to publish it. And we benefited from it. I don't know if they made any money on it. I don't care. I'm not invested in a corporation and like rooting for some big corporate conglomerate to make money. But but this was a Sony game though. This is their push. This is first party all the way.
Oh yeah.
So
I would be interested in knowing like what type of legacy this game had to game designers, because as you mentioned, like it's a rhythm game, and Guitar Hero obviously was probably the most wildly successful Rock Band and things like that, but this really was kind of like the launch run of games of that style.
Yeah.
Even to go to the arcade with like Dance Dance Revolution and stuff like that, I just wonder if people who gravitate towards making games, like if a game like this had more influence on them than it would have on us, like just the regular playing audience.
Sure.
Something interesting to look into, but that's not really what we're here to talk about, because we don't make video games, we just play them and criticize them and praise them.
That's right.
It's a lot easier to do that, isn't it?
That is. So. That's a good question. Like I said, people say that it's the first rhythm game, you know, like that's a big deal, you know, and there's always going to be kind of, I would certainly think that it had a good importance with developers and whatnot.
I would even say it's one of the most unique rhythm games too, you know, it's the first and it's pretty different from the rest. I mean, Guitar Hero spawned a lot of copies, even Rock Band is not that different from Guitar Hero. There's some uniqueness to Parappa the Rapper that sets it apart from all the guitars and instruments and stuff like that, so.
Sure.
And of course, Nintendo has their uniqueness with Donkey Konga, which totally different conversation. But
yes, one for another day. Donkey Konga. I'm actually looking at that right now. I have not played that one. You're number three then, sir.
So my number three is one that I really, really enjoyed. And when I first got my PlayStation, I must have gotten it for Christmas or a birthday, because I remember getting it with a couple games at once. And this is a game that I got with it. And it's the Die Hard Trilogy. Which is a video game based off the three Die Hard movies. There was only three at the time when the game came out. And so you'd basically play all three different Die Hard movies. Die Hard 1, where you're in Nakatomi Plaza. Die Hard 2, which is, you know, the airport situation. And Die Hard with a Vengeance. We're not here to talk about Die Hard games, but that's – or Die Hard movies. But the Die Hard game was really cool to me because it was basically three games in one. Because when you played Die Hard 1, and you didn't have to beat Die Hard 1 to get to Die Hard 2. You could play any of them that you wanted in any order. But there are three different games in the sense of this. Die Hard 1 was just your basic, not a first-person shooter, I guess like a third-person shooter is what it would be called, where you're John McClane, you're running, you got to find bad guys and stuff like that. But then if you picked Die Hard 2, it was more like almost like a rails shooter, you know, like where you use a light gun if you add it and things like that, and crosshairs. And then Die Hard 3 was a lot of driving. You're driving the taxi all over the place. You would drive dump trucks and sports cars all over the place to try and find the explosives. And they were true to the movies, and I think that's what lended me to liking the game right away, because I do love the three Die Hard movies.
Right.
But I thought it was really cool because it's just kind of an outside-the-box thing where it's one game, it's packaged as one game, but it's basically three games.
Yeah, and it's a licensed game that actually was decent. So that's
which is pretty rare. Yeah, one of my honorable mentions is another licensed game that was very good. And you don't see that all that often, especially with movies. Right. You know, maybe a comic license where they have some liberty to kind of change things. But these games were true to the movie plots.
That's,
you know,
an interesting choice.
Yeah, it is a really good game. And I think if I were to pick, Die Hard 1 was the best of those three. And that just probably goes down to my game preference. I would prefer the third-person shooter over the driving and over, you know, the crosshair shooting type game anyways. But what was cool about it was I remember playing this with my brother. He had moved out by this time, but he would come home for the weekend sometimes. And I was really good at Die Hard 1. He was really good at Die Hard 3, and then we kind of do a coin toss on who could do a better job with Die Hard 2. But, yeah, it's just a really fun game that was kind of like, you know, three games in one. Yeah. And even in the title, it's called Die Hard Trilogy, you know. So, but just a really interesting game. Came out in late 96. Again, I didn't get my PlayStation until 97, and I got it with it. So, yeah, made my list.
Cool. And I think it got a Greatest Hits release. So it may have sold enough. I swear I remember that. You can't forget that ugly green, like, tab they had on the covers for their Greatest Hits.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me. I wonder if it probably hadn't been out that long to when I first got it, if it was already the Greatest Hits version. Could've probably been. Not, but I don't know. I'm not sure, but if you've ever played, have you ever played the Die Hard arcade game?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I have not. That is a pretty well-received, revered game, actually, the arcade one. I don't think it came on the PlayStation, but the Saturn had the arcade version, had its own set, and Saturn had the trilogy, too. And I remember there was I remember just kind of looking through, like, for my pricing. It was pretty pricey on the Saturn, but I want to say maybe I played a little bit of the arcade. I can't remember.
Gotcha. If you had played the arcade game and you liked it, well, I was going to say is that's very similar to the first movie, the Die Hard 1 in this game.
Gotcha.
Die Hard 1, I think, is most like the arcade version, with the difference being in the arcade, you'd do your fighting and stuff, but then you'd have to, like, run and escape, and you'd have to hit down at a certain time, or sort of like a Dragon's Lair type thing.
Yeah.
You know, where that was not on... that was not on this game at all, but gotcha. But in terms of the looks and the playability, it was very similar. So
cool,
yeah.
All right, so my number three and my one through three are pretty close, and so I'm going to say this one now because it may be on your list, and then we can pause and talk about it later. But I'm going to put Final Fantasy VII as my number three.
Not on my list, but not on your list. Honorable mentions. Yeah,
I know. You know, we talked about your affinity for 16-bit RPGs. So I did not know if this one came through. So,
I did have this game, yes, but yeah, none of my lists.
So Final Fantasy VII was, you know, I did a lot of Gold Box, Dungeons & Dragons, Apple IIgs games, and Commodore 64. Like, and so, and we, you know, in years before that had done Dungeons & Dragons. So I had a very good idea on what role-playing games were. And then, you know, I played Might & Magic on the computer and things like that. And but this game... It was my first foray into the Final Fantasy series in general. I talked about in the last show how I got like Final Fantasy III, but that was the summer after I had played it when I was at, you know, a Hollywood Video and I could get the 16-bit games discounted. So
sure.
Final Fantasy VII, what it was, I ended up borrowing like the guy that was across the dorm hall from me, and again, 19 years old with a lot of time in, put this in. This is three discs. And I remember getting to the third disc before, like, the semester ended. So I had to give it back to him. And I remember in the summer, like, buying the Greatest Hits version, which I still have. I actually got another copy of it, too. Because back then, you know, you're like, oh, you know, from a collector's standpoint, you may have thought, oh, I don't want the Greatest Hits version. But they didn't do patches back then. So if they had to fix anything, and this is a big game, like, the Greatest Hits version is actually probably better if you wanted to play it today. It is, for sure. And so I never picked it up again, But this is my first foray into kind of turn-based RPGs of this scope, where, you know, you're picking different spells and putting these combos and using your... It's kind of how I defined what I thought a console RPG could be. And I would play some later on, but I always kind of come back to this one of just kind of blowing me away. And this was the game I was alluding to earlier that got this huge push in, like, September 97, where the commercials were everywhere, and it just looked so cool. It was such a big deal. And it was a PlayStation exclusive. So Square, who we talked about on the Super Nintendo before, they weren't really big with Nintendo at this time, and they went exclusive with Sony. And that was a big reason why Sony really pushed ahead here, and kind of the Nintendo 64 didn't have they didn't have those RPGs anymore. They were all on Sony, and that was a system seller too. So again, we're back in that fall of 97 where this came out. It was a huge deal. And so yeah, it was just, you know, I remember a lot of the characters in the story, and again, like, this is probably the game at the time, the RPG I'd put the most hours into, and it kind of defined...
You could put a lot of hours into this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I know that I never beat it, and I know that it's like... surely I have a memory card here somewhere that has this save on it, too. I'm confident that that's the case. Yeah, so that was my number three.
Yeah, it probably would be my number five. And the only reason I threw Abe's on there, Oddworld, is because, like you said, I don't think I ever beat Final Fantasy VII, and I didn't think of it right away. And for me, kind of, if I thought of Oddworld right away, that says something to my memory and my playing with it. So, but gosh, some of the things you mentioned just really bring up what PlayStation really was all about, multiple disc games, which was kind of... a sense of accomplishment and frustration. Like, I hated having to switch to discs, but it's kind of like, cool, I'm one down, two to go, you know? Yep. So you knew you were making some progress on the game, but I think this Final Fantasy game, in a way, they're still making Final Fantasy games, and I feel like they all still feel like this style and this look, in a way.
Yeah, it definitely... You know, they're remaking 7. I think it's supposed to come out this year. I mean, they announced it like 2 years ago. Like a full remake, like PS4 level graphics. You'll probably see it at E3 coming up again. They announced it a couple years ago. I think it's going to be on the docket.
So, I mean, I think this is so iconic. Like, even the gigantic sword.
Oh, yeah.
It's still to this day. Yeah, Cloud Sword is, you know, something that people still... I'm sure Xavier Woods... I'm sure he's a regular listener to this show.
Yeah, he is listening right now, actually. You know, yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Cloud and Sephiroth was in this one, and I actually have a friend who named his daughter after Aerith from this game.
Okay.
So I think this is, even though I think Final Fantasy III is a better game, I think this is the one that maybe is more iconic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that's the right word to put for it, too. And with being iconic, you will get that contrarian opinion out there too.
Sure.
Well, 9 is more the traditional Final Fantasy.
Sure.
And, you know, people may look back and say 7's kind of overrated, but I'll tell you what, its main lasting appeal to me is when I wanted to get into other Final Fantasy games, I would be like, are those characters in it? Oh, Cloud's in this fighting game? Or like, they made some kind of like sequels on the PSP that loosely tied into it. I never played them, but, I have them because it's always good to waste money on stuff like that. And so, like, Cloud, I think, is in, like, Crisis Core or whatever. Or they would make, like, spin-offs that maybe were non-traditional, but he would be in it. And he was a draw. He was the character you wanted to go back and play as with that sword. And it was, I think, you know, I haven't put a lot of time into 3. And we talked about it at length on our last show and how groundbreaking it was. And this is really like a 1-2 punch because that was 6. So this was the sequel to that game. Mm-hmm. And it was so different. And I think also it was one of the first games in like the dystopian future where it's kind of like, this isn't medieval role-playing game. This is we're going around a factory trying to rescue our friends. You know what I mean? And so and then exploring an open world that did feel more traditional. But that was something that impressed on me also.
Well, I think this is one of the first games too where the game, like the story of the game, really became a big deal. You know, like with Mario games, you just pick up and play. Who cares what the story is? But the story with Final Fantasy. I mean, this is a game that one of the first games I could remember that had a shocking moment.
Sure.
You know, where spoiler alert.
I think we can spoil it 20 years later.
Kills. Eris, you know, and you know, that's kind of like a holy cow that happened, you know, so gosh, as I'm talking about it, I feel like I should have ranked it on my list, but, you know, we can't go back
and past that moment, because I remember, like, it's almost like you feel like, I'm going to compare it to, like, the Lord of the Rings, like, you feel like your quest, like, you're getting the third disc, you've got through some big bosses, and I can't remember what they were called, but remember you could, like, summon, like, these, things to come and help you, and they were huge, and they have these dramatic cutscenes. They would come in and, like, fight for you. Like, I can't remember. Someone's going to be listening and kicking themselves, but it's really not my bag. But, you know, and I just remember feeling like this quest, which is kind of why I regret not going through to the end, because you're like, oh, my God, I'm to the third disc. Like, this is it. Like, we're kind of making all this, all these twists and turns. She dies. We're making through, you know, what's going to happen next? It was a hell of a story, and that's kind of a theme that I'm going to be talking about with my next choice when we get to number two, but I'll let you, let's talk about where it ranked, because I'm going to bet it's in the top five.
Oh, top selling?
Yeah.
It is number two, actually.
Number two.
So, as you mentioned,
actually, surprised
Square
not number one, but...
Being, yeah, so am I. As you mentioned, Square being, you know, specific, exclusive to Sony, I think this proves that it was a good choice for Sony, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the second best-selling game of the system in history, so...
And it sold systems. I mean, there were people that you may have had a Nintendo 64, but if you were a role-playing fan, you had nothing on that system.
No.
Nothing. You had Quest 64, which stunk. But you wanted to go back to that Super Nintendo feel, you had to get a PlayStation. And so you had to sit, you know, and that was a huge, huge deal back then.
Yep. So you mentioned something about story playing a bigger part in your number two. I wonder if we have the same number two.
I'm going to bet we're close.
Let's try something very, very unique.
Okay.
On the count of three, let's both say our number two at the same time.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yep.
One, two, three.
Metal Gear Solid.
Okay, yeah,
there
we
go. We did not practice that either. That is... And that's good radio, people. That's what you want to hear here. Metal Gear Solid is my number two. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, Solid Snake. And it's funny, as I was thinking about this, we didn't discuss Metal Gear on our Nintendo episode, even as an honorable mention, although Metal Gear, the original for Nintendo, was actually a really good game. But this is Metal Gear as we know it now. This is what kicked off everything. Solid Snake, you know... sneaking around in a box, fighting DARPA, you know, all kinds of, or not fighting, he has to free them. But this is another multi-disc game. Was this a three-discer as well?
Two, okay. If I recall correctly. Yeah, two.
I think this was a one, you know, whereas Final Fantasy, I think, had it. This was one that really blew me away with graphics, first and foremost, for PlayStation 1. I was like, holy cow, this game was awesome. Solid Snake is, to me, like, one of the coolest good guys, like, anti-hero types, you know? But we got, just the characters in this game. We've got Revolver Ocelot. We've got Liquid Snake. We've got, who else is in this game?
Psycho Mantis, right?
Psycho Mantis, yes. Revolver Ocelot might have been one of my favorites. Sniper Wolf. Vulcan Raven. So many different people in this game. And this is one that I was actually going to talk about, whereas I think this game was very fun and it was very heavy on story, and there's so many Metal Gear Solids, and I've tried playing the future installments, and this is a game that I was talking about earlier where they forgot that games need to be fun. They didn't forget here, but the more recent Metal Gear Solids, I'm not a fan of. You're not going to hear me rank another Metal Gear Solid game.
Okay, sure.
Because to me, it's cutscene and story.
Yeah, Kojima gets a little heavy with the story, this had a good balance. That's a really good talking point, actually.
Yeah, and this is, you know, story matters here. You know, and story is really laid out here, but actually playing the game should matter too. And Metal Gear Solid is a game that I really enjoy playing. I can't really say that for many of the other Metal Gear Solid games. Metal Gear Solid, the original, is just such a good game that I think was enhanced by the fact that people like us who remembered Metal Gear for Nintendo, all of a sudden we see that character now in a 32-bit, you know, and I think that helps too. Like, wow, this is Solid Snake. This is what he looks like. He's not pixelated like he used to be. And just a really cool game. So
here are some of the firsts that it had. So I'll tell you, so I remember Metal Gear on the Nintendo. I remember being really hard. And I also remember being like, it's got to be pattern vest, right? So it's like, you know what's going to happen in each room. You know where who's yep. in the truck. So, yep. But it was hard, man. And you just, it was hard. Like, you would still get shot, and you're like, okay. So, but you felt like you could still try to progress. But it was a pretty challenging game. So this game was, we talk about from a production standpoint, and I think you hit on it where from a graphic standpoint too, is mm-hmm. so we're 3 years into the system in the U.S., four in Japan, so we're going to call it four because, I mean, Kojima and Konami are Japanese companies, so they've been programming for the PlayStation now for 4 years. So you're talking, this is the peak of this system, right? These guys yeah. are moving on to PS2 next. This is the peak. And the camera angles in it were amazing. You never yes. saw that before. The production on it, the voices were amazing too. And the game I'm going to talk about later, not so good. Not always hit and miss, but they nailed it here. And so from a big budget like story and incredible gameplay and incredible stealth gameplay, right? So maybe we take, not take for granted, but like the stealth genre, like this is it right here. This is the template. Yep. This is the, this is what people look at and they kind of deviate from. Now when they come up with stealth games. But this was the... I don't think it's probably fair to say the first. I don't know. But, like, this is certainly the biggest. And I remember I beat it. And the there were three difficulty levels. And I remember you could unlock, like, a harder one. I can't remember if I must have been, like, on normal. I remember it being, like, forgiving in the sense that you could, like, restart the level then. It wasn't like you died and had to go back very far. And but I do remember beating it. It was one of, like, my biggest gaming accomplishments. And so it set – at this time – I'm going to talk a little bit about sports games later, right? And I talked before about how, like, they were so big for me through the 90s. But this was the system, and these were the games that kind of spread out to, like, the – I'm a gamer. You know, it was – I've beaten Metal Gear Solid. And then to your earlier talking point about, like, all the other ones I've been interested in, and I have them in some different forms, either through an anthology or for the PS2, and I never played them. Like, it was always kind of like you went back on your memory, and maybe you imagined this next iteration's being very good, but I never played them. And I don't think – and I
know I played Metal Gear Solid 2 –
Sons of Liberty or whatever.
Sons of Liberty. Yeah. And even that, what's hard to remember is the chronology of the games is all over the place. Because, like, Metal Gear Solid 2 takes place before Metal Gear Solid 1. I know that. I don't know that. I don't remember.
I think the offshoots were cool. Like, there was that Survivor. That's the one that's out now. There was, like, that one for the PSP that was, like, you're kind of, like, stranded on an island. It was more like jungle stealth survival.
Yep.
They've done cool things with it. And Kojima is an incredible developer, although it can be, like you said, with the story and stuff, can be pretty heavy-handed.
Almost too much. And even that, like, with Metal Gear Solid, I felt like if you jumped in on the third game, you didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, so it's maybe almost like expects you to know.
It's a little bit intimidating to start. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask this, and I don't remember. We talked about Psycho Mantis, and I thought his battle was kind of fun.
Yep.
Was Metal Gear Solid the one where he would tell you what games you played on your on your memory card?
Okay. Yep. It was the weirdest thing, man. They had a program where you're battling this guy, and he starts talking to you like he knows you, and you're like, what the hell is going on here?
Very cool stuff.
And it was a really cool trick where it would read the save games on your memory card. And if you had other Konami ones on there, you would mention that or call that out too, and you're like, what's going on here? And I think that, similar to that X-Men trick we talked about before, didn't you have to unplug your controller or something like that to beat, or unplug your memory card?
Some, I think so.
Some trick in there to eventually beat him, because he would just keep zapping you, and I remember this, and I'm like, how do you get past it? I think you had to, like, unplug your memory card, and then you could beat him, and then you put it back in or whatever, and then it's saved. That's probably completely wrong, but anyway, there was some type of trick in there, but I remember that too. And I also remember, being like getting through it and being like, "Wait, Metal Gear's the mech? Like, not a big like mech guy at all." So like, oh wait, it's about getting in these big machines to shoot each. Oh, okay, because you just think of like Snake on the ground. Oh, it's
the mech. And in a lot of ways, you think of like Solid Snake. He's Metal Gear. You know what I mean?
Right. You think that's it, but no, Metal Gear's actually the robot. Yeah.
I remember fighting, I think it was Metal Gear Rex. It kind of reminded me of RoboCop. and add 209, you know, because you get to Rex and it's that big giant.
I remember that too,
structure.
Yeah.
So yeah. So
And two is they had, remember the VR missions, the training things you could do?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then they actually spun a legit game off called Metal Gear Solid VR Missions.
Yep.
That was 300 of these, like, tactical training puzzle. That was a puzzle platform. I mean, they were all puzzles.
That one I was fine with. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I did play a little bit of it. Yeah. And if you get the Metal Gear Solid Collection, it came out last generation on PS3. You get, there were codes in there for the PlayStation games to download to your system. Or your Vita too, I think, that would work on. And so you could revisit those places. Actually, that had the whole series that had Metal Gear 1 and 2 from the Nintendo on there. Actually had the MSX versions of it, which was a Japanese gaming computer that Konami developed for.
I never had Metal Gear 2. I never played that one.
Snake's Revenge. Yeah, yeah. I can't say I've played it either. It is on my shelf. But again, it's because I enjoyed Metal Gear Solid so much, I all of a sudden had this affinity for the series, even though I really didn't have any other connection to it.
Sure.
Just an amazing game. I mean, it holds up today, and when you talk about defining, it could very well be number one. I'm really curious what your number one is now.
I would assume some of our listeners would think this would be our number one going into the episode. And
sure.
Or Final Fantasy VII, to be honest.
Yeah, like I said, my 3-1 are very, very close. And actually, Metal Gear and Final Fantasy, as I was kind of finishing up my thoughts, I shuffled them. I originally had Final Fantasy VII number two, but I was like, yeah, but like I didn't beat that game. Like Metal Gear Solid was like this is one of my greatest gaming accomplishments ever.
Yeah, I think with both of them, depending on which one you were more into, the term "blown away" I think is accurate for both of them. And Metal Gear Solid blew me away. I could see how Final Fantasy VII would do the same thing if you were heavy into RPGs in that style. But both of them have survived, you know, the test of time in the sense that they're still relevant series, still relevant characters. So yeah, I don't think we're wrong in picking these games.
Right.
They're no Oddworld, but you know.
Well. So what's your number? I kind of like, though, real quick, your Oddworld is kind of it's nice synergy with my Parappa, though.
Yeah.
We're not like prepping for this, but we're hitting on these points that I want to talk about anyway in conjunction with each other. So now your number one, I am very interested to hear what this is.
So my number one is also the first game in a line of games. And this was a game that I fell in love with. I got kind of at a... I'm trying to remember where I bought this at, but it was a kind of a situation where I didn't go in intending to buy this, but I ended up getting it. It's actually available on a couple systems. But my number one is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Interesting.
I loved Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, also available on PlayStation 1, I believe. But I will actually talk about that on a different system.
So I will also. And now I'm trying to think on where did I think most of my, because it's going to rank, I'm going to talk about that game. But I think both of mine were the Dreamcast, which is why, spoilers if you didn't think that's where we were foreshadowing to. It wasn't on Nintendo. Well, I guess it was on Nintendo 64, but I think I remember playing it on the PlayStation. No, it was definitely Tony Hawk 2 on Dreamcast.
Yeah,
I think they were both on Dreamcast. Oh, I have them both here for Dreamcast. They were Dreamcast ones for me. Tony Hawk 2 was good.
We're going to talk about that a lot when we get to Dreamcast. But Tony Hawk's Pro Skater was just an incredible game. It basically made skateboarding games a thing. Well, I guess it didn't. Skater Die for Nintendo.
No, it made it a thing. Skater Die.
But this was such a fun game. You know, I've mentioned the word fun multiple times today, and maybe we should say that every time we're talking about games, but this game was something that I did not expect to be hooked on. It's a game, you know, you've got Metal Gear Solid sitting there, multiple discs, Final Fantasy sitting there, multiple discs, and then you got a game where you just hit half pipes and hit button combos, and I would play this over those games every single time. I loved it. And it's a shame that we're probably never going to see it re-released because of, I would guess, music licenses, because, you know, the soundtrack was part of the appeal. I still will occasionally check the PlayStation Store in hopes that,
It
did show up before, but it hasn't been back in a long time.
So it came out on the 360, and the PS3, I want to say, too. I know I have it for the 360, which was the original game, like, remastered. But I don't think the music was all the same. But it definitely was the first game. Because it's called, like, Tony Hawk HD or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have it for the 360.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's quite a few. I mean, they have Tony Hawk, I think it's 5 for PlayStation 4, which I haven't played. I think 1 and 2 are the peak. And I figured I'd talk about 1 here because this is the system I had it for. But and even 2, for me, these were characters that I knew. I wasn't a skater growing up, but my brother was. So obviously, I think everybody knows Tony Hawk. But I knew Bucky Lossick before I ever played the game. And I knew who Bob Burnquist was. You know, I didn't know all of them. But basically, you know, you could pick these different skaters, go to these different parks, and just do tricks. You know, there wasn't a lot to it other than just a ton of fun stuff, you know. I don't really know what to say to sell this game to somebody.
Well, I think it's tricks. I think you can, because if you're not into skateboarding, this game is still amazing. Like, yeah. I didn't skateboard or even know. I mean, obviously you know Tony Hawk, but like I didn't know anybody else. But this game is one of those ones where it's like you find that arcade sports game that appeals to multiple people and it's like real surprising. Well, that was Tony Hawk, because you got in there, you did tricks. They, you know, nowadays we see all these incremental rewards and stuff like that to open up things. Well, this game nailed it out of the gate with how that worked. You know, you had to collect like certain number of things in each world, so you would try to do that on this run, and then you you know the different parts, and there was a ton to do in each one. Yeah, and or you go back and try to get all the tapes, and in this certain time period that you had to skate, and they just made it. They designed it so well to hook you to keep playing. I'm just gonna do one more run. This time I'm gonna do this. So I gotta try to find that 10th tape. And even if you didn't like skateboarding, I love this game. I mean, I'm going to talk about it later because it's going to rank very high on my Dreamcast list. But I'll talk about it maybe more here and go a different direction. But it would be absolutely on like my all-time list of games that I spent a ton of time into that was completely unexpected. Again, I didn't go into it thinking like I want a skateboarding game. I went into it because it got really good reviews and like word of mouth was strong. And you played it and you're like, this is amazing. One of the best games of all time.
It really is, and of course, when a game like that hits, you see copycats. There was other skating games, and they even had BMX games, which Dave Mira had a pretty decent BMX game.
That was made by the same people that made Tony Hawk.
Yeah, so it was decent, but something about the Tony Hawk game was just, it was easier and harder at the same time, if that makes sense. It was easier to get the hang of, but it was harder to master. And that's what I love in a game that you can just pick up and figure out right away, but if you want to be real good at it, you have to play.
And I didn't think it was too difficult, though, to get to that level here. No. Like, you could learn the tricks, and as being someone who likes game but isn't a particularly great player of games, I felt this game, which I also beat, was like, no, you can't. It had, like, the perfect, like ramping difficulty where you learned it as it went along. And that was, I think, why it made it so memorable, too.
Yeah, and I think Tony Hawk 2 actually just improves on everything.
I agree with that, I think. I have to think about it. And then also there was, I think really 3, which came out on the Xbox, PS2, was like kind of like the, that was like the trilogy of.
Yeah, and then
like, it was really good. Like I remember hearing like, you know, well, the best, like if you had to play it today, you would want to play the Xbox game because it had like everything they had built into it. But at the time, of course, you want a series to get better as it goes along. But the first was just unbelievable.
Yeah, just different levels. You can even just do the original, like where you first started the game, just in that warehouse just to practice. And you can have fun there. You know, just skating around in the warehouse. So
that's about as far as I got on the HD remaster and playing it. But
this is a game that's kind of a shame that they still try to make. And it's like it's almost like they never understood what made the game so special, and because the more recent stuff is just not there.
Yeah, I mean, you know? It comes into, you know, and I'm sure there's different developers now too, right? Publisher, Acclaim's not around. Acclaim did this, right? They're not around anymore as the publisher. So, but you're right; it could be designed by somebody else, and they just can't, or they're trying to build
Activision.
On it and offer.
Activision.
Oh yeah, well they're still around.
Yeah. So, and Neversoft Gaming.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know who they are.
What's funny is as I bring up the Wikipedia for it, just to see if there's anything I'm forgetting, who played this game on the Nintendo 64? Like,
well, kids that only had a Nintendo 64, but it's interesting because it is really the only multi-plat game we're going to talk about today. Yep. Well, I may walk that back, but It was Dreamcast then too. What year did this come out? It was 99, right? Or was it 2000? It was 99. Yeah,
but late 99.
So it was because Dreamcast was September 99. So you had Dreamcast version, PlayStation, and PlayStation again. Popularity wise, is selling like gangbusters. So that I'm sure that version sold a ton. Is it on your list for the?
I can tell you. By the way, Metal Gear Solid was number 10. By the way, we didn't mention
number
that.
10. Interesting. Okay,
yeah, surprise. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 22nd. Selling game in PlayStation 1, 3.5 million copies.
Okay, that's a lot of copies.
Yeah, and that's just on one system.
Yeah, but Activision being the kings of multiplat, right? So they they had it on the Nintendo 64, and I guess if you know that was your only option, that's what you had to play. But man, it was amazing on the Dreamcast, as you can imagine. Being souped up,
and that game was tailor made for the Dreamcast controllers. I believe
it was too. Oh, that's a great point. That I'll probably revisit, but we won't spend a lot of time on it. But it was so good on the Dreamcast controller.
It really was, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great number one. And as you guys can pick up here, we are really talking about, now we're in a groove in a year and generation is what I should say, a gaming generation, the fifth generation, where you're talking like some of the biggest games ever. You know, industry defining. And so my number one is also one of the best games on the system, and that is Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
I thought you were going to go with that. Okay.
So this was another example of kind of being in that, borrowed from the guy down the hall, and this was the first game where I really kind of looked at the gaming fact from GameFAQs.com or IGN's walkthrough they had for free online. Again, this is, this is 98, and I went through, and so this is they call it Metroidvania, and essentially what it is, it's a platformer, but it's non-linear, even though there's certain areas you can only get to when you have certain abilities. So it feels like it's non-linear. You can go all over the place. You can go back to find something else, and there's this really great map that you can follow along with. And we've talked about the Castlevania series on each of our other shows, well, the Nintendo ones. We did leave off Bloodlines for the Genesis. It did not get mentioned. I have not played that either.
I played it. It's not a bad game.
I always thought that Castlevania was Nintendo exclusive, when I was younger. So I was always like, how did they get a game on the Genesis? Not thinking that Konami would want to make money and release different games to different systems.
It's actually pretty tough, the Genesis game.
Oh, yeah. Super hard from what I've heard. But Symphony of the Night is the crowning achievement in this series. And I think that we talked before about kind of everyone going back to Final Fantasy VII being like what they think other games in the series should be. That's what Castlevania Symphony of the Night was. And they released a ton of different games like the Game Boy Advance and where they would try to recreate this. Because, again, it's 2D, which is unique for the PlayStation at the time, too. Everybody's doing 3D bubbles. And this is 2D. Beautiful. And it just had, instead of the whip, you had all these different weapons and an inventory, and you could turn into these different there was the bat, there was the wolf. And I remember it had a percentage counter too, so you could see your progress. And then when you beat it or got to a certain point, the castle inversed itself. And then you did it backwards. And I did the whole thing 100%. And I had never done that in a game before to get 100% of it. So that's probably why it sits high with me, as it should, right? It's a defining game for the system to do that. And it also had a great difficulty curve. As you ramped up and you leveled up, the enemies became easier, as games can be sometimes. So even at the end, it was I'm walking through these huge levels, but my guy is so powerful from all this grinding I did and going all around.
I was just
destroying these guys before I got to Dracula, and it was no problem at all. It was one of those ones where you level up before the fight and you're overpowered and with abilities. Right. And I was using a walkthrough too, so I made sure I found every secret in there, every little percentage point to get that 100% in that map. And I absolutely destroyed the game. It was great. And I remember because after that, I had bought my own Greatest Hits copy just to have a copy of it, which I still have. And I've never actually gone back and revisited or tried to play it again because I don't think that it would top what I did before.
Sure. Yeah, something you mentioned, I think, that kind of becomes a thing with this generation moving forward is 100% on a game. which is really nothing that we ever saw in systems prior, or nothing that where the game tracked it for us, you know.
Sure.
But now we play games and we can look and see what we're missing and what little side pieces we're missing, and that's some for someone like me. I love that stuff. I always want to get 100% on a game now, you know. Or with PlayStation, I like to get all the trophies. Although okay. sometimes that's so impossible, you know. Some of these trophies that they ask you to get, but yeah, I really like games like that. And this is a game that just makes me think that Castlevania is a underappreciated franchise overall in the world of video games. Obviously, it's got its fans and it's got its voices, but it's never really a series that people list, is it?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? So yeah. This is.
But I mean, we've talked about it three times.
We've talked about it, but you're right. From a recency standpoint, I couldn't tell you anything about the PS2 Castlevania games other than they weren't like this, right? And that's all we wanted was like this 2D nonlinear platformer with amazing gameplay and awful voice acting. and really cool mood music that absolutely, it was everything you wanted the Castlevania kind of like. I read Dracula growing up, right? And you talked about how like you and your dad really liked the aesthetic of the first Castlevania games. It was everything rolled into one game where they were all back, you know, like, and you did everything in it. And it was kind of like, it was the ultimate achievement. I didn't play the PS2 games. I was interested in the 360 games, which were really like God of War Castlevania Edition, like a 3D thing where you're swinging this big whip around and just killing people. I respect that one for sure. And they released it was on the 3DS and you could get it on the 362 download, like kind of like a Metroidvania kind of supplement. But it was really the portable games that that Konami made for like the Advance and stuff that were like kind of spiritual successors to this. The timeline is out of this world. You can watch videos on YouTube that try to explain like where all the games fall into each other. I wouldn't even start to try to do that, but with the Alucard and the Belmonts and all that stuff. I would say that this is really the peak of it. And so, and then the Nintendo 64 Castlevania games were bad. And so Castlevania 64 is bad, 3D bad. And so it was... Yeah, this is kind of the peak of it.
Which is a shame because this is a game that didn't really sell, you know. But
oh, it didn't. What did it go on your list? I thought it did sell.
I don't even see it on the list.
Really? Yeah, I know it got a greatest hits release.
And what's crazy about it? I mean, this game like won Game of the Year awards and all kinds of stuff. And it's just maybe that's why the series isn't widely regarded because the best outing of it is the one that nobody really played.
I can't believe that's not on that. I can't believe that's not on that sales list in there. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm scrolling through and I'm not seeing it. And granted, there's some really big games on here like Hot Shots Golf and Derby Stallion that did sell. What is Derby Stallion? And how did 2 million copies get sold of that?
Probably in Japan. It's probably some weird horse racing games that they had over there. No offense if you're in Japan listening to this.
Is the top 100, not even top 100, it's any game that sold over a million copies.
Did they put it in like as like SOTN, like abbreviated or anything like that?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
That's weird. Is really weird.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why
it's not talked about anymore as a franchise.
It certainly is revered, though. This game will be widely revered as one of the best ever. Konami has done a nice job of making sure their back catalog is out there. I do not know if you can get this on PS4, but I know you can get it on the last generation's games as a download or a PS1 classic. Mm-hmm. There was another Castlevania game for the PlayStation. It was called, I'm not going to have to Google it on here too. I got that big setup. There was another one that was essentially a reimagining of Castlevania 1 in 32-bit. Castlevania Chronicles is what it was called. Kind of remember, like on the PlayStation 2 also, they had they would release like these Final Fantasy Anthology, Final Fantasy Chronicles, and they would be like the older games kind of ported over to the PlayStation.
Yeah, like souped up graphic wise and stuff almost.
Yeah, and they they're not particularly well received, but Castlevania Chronicles was an example of one, and it didn't sell anything in the US, but I have a download of it, which was Castlevania 1, but for PlayStation. Hmm. And it was the same thing. I think you could save in it, though, and stuff. And so, again, that was off the success of Symphony of the Night, for sure. I remember they had put that out.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah, I do not see it on the best-selling games list. Do you have a guess as to what the best-selling game for the PlayStation 1 was?
Let's see here. The listeners are thinking out loud here, too. I
would never have guessed this. I mean, I guess maybe I would have eventually, but it wouldn't be in my top five guesses.
So I got to think it's not one of the ones. I would have guessed all the ones I mentioned so far.
Right. I would have thought Final Fantasy. That would have been my guess, probably.
Yeah. I really thought it was. Yeah, that's true.
And you may know this better than me. Maybe it got boosted a little bit like Mario Games do. Maybe this was shipped with a console or something. But Gran Turismo.
Oh, yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. I'm sure it was packed in eventually, so they probably counted like consoles. Sales late in the life. Yeah, that's a good one to honorable mention about. Only, I played it a little bit. It was one of those ones where it's like, oh, it must be cool, but I like racing, but I like arcade racers, and Gran Turismo is the opposite. The first one is pretty good. I spent the most time on the first one, but every game after that, I've like instantly regretted, even if I paid like next to nothing for it. I'm like, I am never going to play this game. It is just hundreds of hours of like detailed car stuff that I could not be any less interested
it's
in.
It's not a game for me at all.
Simulation racing is not my thing. But I can believe that that's number one. That was a huge defining groundbreaking game on the PlayStation.
Well, I mean, it spawned how many sequels? Cool. I mean, at least a handful.
Sadly, they've dropped the ball of late, and when they finally released one for the PS4, I think it tanked, even with the updates they could put in. They just developing games is hard nowadays with the expectations and all the money into it, and it is a challenge.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other, before we get to our honorable mentions, let's talk about some of the other big sellers, because I'm going to probably believe most of them are pretty defining. Sure.
Well, what's funny is it's Gran Turismo's number one, Final Fantasy VII, and then number three, Gran Turismo 2.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, because the first was so big. Yeah, that's interesting.
And then also in the top 10, we got another Final Fantasy game, Metal Gear Solid's in there. And then three other games, which are definitely game series that are associated with PlayStation. Crash Bandicoot's in there, which we briefly mentioned. Yep. I like Crash. I didn't love it. I don't know.
Yeah,
he
was like the Donkey Kong Country of PlayStation, sure, where it was like, oh, this platformer looks really cool, and it goes up and down. And I remember playing the heck out of the first two.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was one of the games I got with my console was Crash Bandicoot. But again, it was like, oh, this looks great. Oh, the gameplay is a little clunky. It's hard. You know, it actually is almost just like Donkey Kong Country. I'm describing exactly how I did that.
Right, game. The up and down really made for like timing your jumps. Really
it did.
Tricky.
You really had to do a lot of runs through. And he was the mascot. You know, I'm glad you mentioned.
Oh, he was. Like they had a racing game just like Mario Kart with Crash. Yeah,
that was not bad. Crash Team Racing. That was not a bad game. But that was he died off after. I don't remember any of his PS2 games. He was a PS1. Guy, Crash.
What's funny is they just re-released like a Crash, kind of like a
trilogy.
Legacy thing.
Yeah.
And if you ever play the Uncharted games, Uncharted 4, while you're sitting around the house, you can sit down and play the first level of Crash Bandicoot.
That's
like the character in the game plays a video game, and the game you play is Crash Bandicoot.
That's funny.
Yeah,
the remaster of Crash, the Insane Trilogy, I think they called it. Yeah, generally okay received.
Yeah.
One you'll probably see for very little money, going forward. It's pretty cheap. I actually do want to eventually get that, just because that one does tug at me. One and two, So the other Final Fantasy games, real quick, so I remember Final Fantasy VIII was really, that was four discs, I think.
That was a beast.
I remember getting it from, like, Blockbuster and, like, having it just be like rubber banded of like discs and empty shells and like a photo. And like, I guess you remember being like, I have a copy of it, but I never could get into it. Cause again, Final Fantasy VII was what I imagined a role playing game to be. Not like a, and that VIII is more like the games today, I guess maybe. And it just didn't appeal to me. The aesthetic didn't appeal to me at all, but IX did, but I never played IX. IX was like a throwback to like IX. Or I guess
what's funny is a Final Fantasy game that I actually enjoyed for PlayStation 1 was Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, that's a strategy game that's fantastic. I enjoyed that too.
Yeah,
I played a lot of those type of games on the computer, but that was one. That's a good one to talk about. Boy, that spawned a lot too. That was an incredibly successful game. Really cool game.
Yeah. Still looking at this top selling list. Yeah. Tekken 3's in there, which the Tekken series kind of we talked about fighting
thing. Yeah, Tekken 2 was. Yeah. You know, I talked before about how like they hit their peak like in the fall of '97. Tekken 2 was one of those games that kind of carried it earlier. In the PlayStation's life cycle, where it was like, oh, this is a really cool fighting game, and you're coming off of Street Fighter and stuff like that. I do want to name one series before you go into your list that we didn't talk about. It's on my honorable mentions. It's Resident Evil.
Yep, that's on mine too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and I do want to talk. That was another game. The first one came out prior to that when I got into the system, but I remember playing it, and I wanted to talk about it because that was the first like horror game I'd really played because, you know, it's hard to do horror on 16-bit. Yeah, there was Clock Tower. They could create, like, suspense. Like, oh my gosh, you know, is this guy going to show up in this room with me? And, like, but sure. Resident Evil was, you know, dogs jumping through windows, scaring the expletive, hello, Steve and his children, you know, out of you. You know what I mean? Like, that was the first time they ever did that, really. And that was, like, my mind was just blown away with, like, what the possibilities were of, like, a horror game in a mansion. And then it kind of went in the direction that I wasn't really, I was like, oh. Kind of like, oh, the Metal Gears, the robot. Yep. Like, oh, wait, this is about this? And then it wasn't as good to me as much as I like zombies, you know? And,
right. Or what well, I what's thought funny it could is, be. Is I have that listed as a honorable mention along with Silent Hill.
Oh,
because
yeah,
I think Silent Hill also kind of a survival horror game.
Survival horror. That is a defining game. We really I'm glad you mentioned it. That could be a rank and file, like a top 10, because there are a lot. I'm glad that we're going through some of these other lists so people can hear these names, too, because that game, again, was incredibly groundbreaking.
I thought that was creepier than Resident Evil.
It was, for sure. Yeah. That was a straight horror. I mean, they defined the genre. I think that's a defining horror game for video games in general, without a doubt.
Have you ever seen the Silent Hill movie?
I have not.
Neither have I.
Okay. Right. I've not. Moving I've heard right the along. Games. The games. The first couple ones are pretty well revered, and then I'm not really sure how the series. You know, again, it's kind of hard to one up. You're like, how gross or grotesque can you be, and what kind of drama can you play off of? And I don't know. That was it for me. Was the I thought about getting like the anthology on the 360. It had like the first three games on it, but it was a really bad port. So I don't think I ever got that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else you got on that list there?
Oh, let's see, our best-selling list. Tomb Raider, a couple Tomb Raider games.
Oh, yeah, about
that.
Multi-platform with Saturn 2 and PC.
Yeah, I didn't really get into Tomb Raider in the early days. I really like the current Tomb Raider that we're on.
Oh, cool, okay.
And I'll talk about that by the time we get to PS3, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, sure. So. That's PS3, and then it was also like quote-unquote money grabbed, like reproduced on PS4. That's a good one to talk about. I remember playing those games, but it was more of the PC. But she was another one that was probably biggest on PlayStation for sure.
Yeah, definitely there was us.
And it was certainly
boys were into Lara Croft.
Oh, of course. You know, you could you
famously
could do
played by Angelina Jolie in the movie versions as well.
Yes, yep. A couple movies. That series spawned. That's another defining one for the system.
Yeah, I mean, anytime a video game gets a movie made, I think that it's, you know, it's got some legs to it.
For
but
sure.
Yeah, the original Tomb Raider is in the top 10, and Tomb Raider 2 is also in the top 10 in selling games for PlayStation. Just scroll through the list. We got a lot of Crash, Final Fantasy stuff. A couple that jump out is in terms of mascots. Spyro the Dragon was another one that I think they tried to maybe make a character. Rayman, which actually there's a Rayman game that was available for free download on the PlayStation Store just in the last few days. But this is the original Rayman.
Yeah.
Which is a game I've actually never played.
Yeah, I played a little bit of it. It's a great platformer, and it really peaked the last generation. There's some great games on the PlayStation 3 and 360 for Rayman. Like, if you like those collectible platformers with really, like, interesting... And, like, the Wii U game had a really cool kind of aesthetic to it with a second player using this screen to kind of open obstacles for you. So I liked it more recently. When I've gone back to some of the PS1 platformers, not great. Now, one of the names that what was the name you mentioned before? Now, Spyro.
Spyro
was another pseudo mascot that I thought was pretty good. I remember playing the first one, and I remember my wife had played them too. So when we met, it was kind of like, let's see this on the PS2, and it wasn't that good. But
No, it wasn't at all.
I played it on the PS3, actually, too. I remember we played that together.
But wasn't Spyro available on multiple systems?
No, that was Sony. That was Sony.
Was Sony? Okay.
Yeah, they developed it.
But it's just scrolling through the list. I mean, it's a lot of games you'd recognize. There's only two others that I think maybe we could mention. One is Twisted Metal. That's a driving game that I probably liked a lot more than Gran Turismo, which is sort of like a Demolition Derby style.
Sure, smash that's into a good people. One.
Yeah,
that was certainly like unique. That was early in the system defining. Absolutely, yes. I mean, it spawned at least Twisted Metal 2.
Four or five, at least. Yeah, there was a 3, too.
That first one was a huge game the first couple years of the system, no doubt.
Yeah. And then it's always fun for me to look at these lists and see, oh, wow, this game was out for this system. SmackDown 2 Know Your Role.
Yeah.
I would have swore that was a PlayStation 2 game. I would have swore that it was, but that was, apparently wasn't. So.
Yeah, let's segue into wrestling games here. Neither of us listed any of them, but I do have some talking points here.
Yeah, when we get to N64, I will have some things
for
to show.
Sure. But I did play WWF games on the PlayStation. SmackDown 2, I was already in the next generation, or like you said, No Mercy and stuff. I didn't go back. I didn't like the SmackDown games. I always wanted to try to like them even on PS2.
Yeah, there's one real good one that everyone kind of points to, which is Here Comes the Pain.
Yeah, that
was probably them at their best. But even that, I think, pales to the N64 engines that we'll talk about.
On PlayStation, I had most of them, because I had, again, my story, you know, I got into wrestling early in 98. So sure. Warzone came out that summer.
Yep.
I was all over that. And then Attitude, these were by Acclaim. So everybody remembers having to do, like, you know, input combos to do basic freaking moves. Like,
yep.
Like
up, down, left, square, body slam.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you had to do this, you had to pause and, like, look at the move list, like, 40 times in a match until you got really good at one guy. So I guess they encourage you to do that. So, but
a pretty cool game that I had. As I mentioned earlier, the local shop that had the Japanese imports, I actually bought an All Japan Pro Wrestling PlayStation 1 game. And I thought about ranking it, but one, I couldn't find a lot of information to kind of jog my memory. But it was similar to if you played the WCW PlayStation 1 game.
WCW versus the World. Right, that's the one you're talking about. Not the Nitro crappy ones. WCW versus the World was like the 3D. It kind of looked like the precursor to the Nintendo 64 games. I think that's the one you're talking about. Yeah, it was a pretty good game. That one kind of gets glossed over a little bit.
Yeah.
Because everybody thinks of, like, at the same time, Nintendo 64 was killing it with WCW versus versus NWO World Tour or whatever it was. But WCW versus the World was a really good game for the PS1. Yeah, I think they skinned it with All Japan too. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, and you could find like the WCW games for N64. They had those generic characters. Those were All Japan guys.
Right.
You know, like I think Aki Man was Mitsuharu Misawa, something like that. I'd have to look it up, and I'll do my research before we get there. But yeah, if you want to listen to us talk wrestling games, I encourage you to check out when we record our N64.
I'm going to have to do more prep work than ever for that one, so I don't make any mistakes. Even though I did live them through in my gaming prime, so you know you have the pedigree. It's not like we're reliving it for the first time or reading it or playing it now. But
sure,
yeah, I got to think back on those. But you know, I just remember like Nitro and Thunder; they stunk. For the PlayStation, they were terrible games.
Yep.
But that was wrestling. But Attitude was great, and then the ECW games were just skins of them later on. But Warzone and Attitude were pretty good. Attitude was cool because you had like the whole calendar year you could play, and that was certainly novel at the time.
You know, if there's another game franchise I could mention as an honorable mention, just to shift topics real quick, Spider-Man had some really good PlayStation 1 games.
Oh,
and this was before the Tobey Maguire movies, so it's Spider-Man based off comics, you know, or maybe based off the animated series, but those are games that I thought about ranking as my number four, but there's a one and a two, and my mind kind of has mushed them together as one. But very fun
I remember
games.
That. Yeah, I remember, because we all kind of wanted that open world Spider-Man game, and I think it's coming soon to PS4, yep, buddy, this fall. I think all the comics guys, we're all going to be playing that game.
It looks real good.
I'm going to be – that's going to be one I'm probably going to buy right away and try to really get into. But I remember those ones for PlayStation 2, and the interesting thing is that, you know, those are never going to be reprinted for licensing reasons and whatnot, and you're never going to see them again. Yeah, they were really well received. I remember like Strider 2 was another one, like late in the system, and that Spider-Man game that were really, really cool games. Spider-Man, that's a good one. Now, I didn't talk about any sports games on this list, giving people a reprieve after the Genesis show. But I did have a whole bunch that I did want to kind of just quickly gloss through so people could nod along. So Sony, again, coming through big here with their Game Day franchise. I mentioned that earlier that my friend had brought one of the earlier iterations of it. But I remember like Game Day 98 being like, it had Jerome Bettis on the cover of it. And that was like an amazing football game, and they just killed Madden. Madden didn't get good until 99, 2000 on there. But Game Day, and then their college football version game, Game Breaker, like their 98 version, like those games were tremendous. I have huge respect for them and played a ton of them. I didn't play a lot of the face-off or the basketball games. I preferred to stick with NBA Live, NBA Live 98. On the PlayStation NBA Live 99, I probably sunk hundreds of hours into those games. You know, trying to recreate the Sixers with Iverson at the time, you know, and so creating Tim Thomas so he could be on the team. But those ones, so sports-wise, was I just wanted to call out Sony, who their 989 Studios made these games, and they were a little bit more arcadey, but it was still, you know, it was nice to have that alternate. And then really one that I didn't put on the list was NFL Blitz. And being multi-platform too, this is mind-blowing, right? Is that really the Nintendo 64 version is the best? So it may talk about it. Well, it's not going to make my list, but
we'll spend some time on it.
We'll spend some time on the Blitz. I didn't want people to think that we were missing the NFL Blitz when it came out in this generation too. What any other sports games that come to mind?
For PS1, not so much. PlayStation sports games for me kind of start and end with NBA Street. enjoyed.
PS2
and into 3 there was a Street, right? I believe, but I think when we come to PS2 I'll spend some time on NBA Street, which I really enjoyed. They had NFL Street, which I don't know, but like you said, I think Blitz was superior to Madden at this time, and it wasn't
Blitz
really
is
until
a ton of fun, and they did a good job. The PS version was fine, but Nintendo 64 was essentially like arcade perfect. And then when Dreamcast came out, they were literally bringing arcade games home to the console because they literally ran on the same stuff. Yeah. And so it was those were really, really good. So probably talk about them later. But that was another groundbreaking thing. Arcade sports games were like all the rage. I mean, you'd seen bad versions of the 16-bit, but they got good in the fifth generation, and the PlayStation had a ton. And my favorite PlayStation exclusive like skin of NFL Blitz was Kurt Warner's Arena Football League. You ever hear about that game? Yeah, it came out obviously later because I mean Warner didn't make it to like 99, so you're talking like the system's been out for like 6 years at this point. But that came out like 2000, I want to say 2001, and it was Arena League. It was NFL Blitz kind of skinned as Arena League. I remember playing that one a little bit. So
yeah, that kind of had like a 16-bit look to it to me, if I remember.
Interesting. I don't remember that.
I'd have to look it up. I don't know. But it's comparable to Blitz.
Yeah. So interesting games. And this, again, too, one of our points with the PlayStation was it was so popular that you could get really weird stuff like an AFL game. You know what I mean? And they had – and that came into PS2, too, where you could find some really obscure sports games. And nowadays you won't see that. But
no, not at all.
But PS1 had some crazy stuff. For sure. I'm sure I'm forgetting some things.
Well, we were talking about an article I read before we came on the air that I found the top 50 underappreciated PS1 games. We were going to discuss it, but I feel like we shouldn't because I'd just be reading names of games that I've never played.
Yeah, let me hear the top five and think if I've played them before.
Sure, let me bring that up real quick. Yeah. I've got it open, but it's not on the top five list.
I will say, too, for NHL, '98 was my jam, too. And I think NHL 2000 for the PlayStation was like the peak of EA, really, especially for that generation. That's one of the best games for that series ever.
I will say that a couple of these games I have heard of, like Bust a Move is on the top 50.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one, yeah.
You mentioned
multi-platform, though. Like, I don't consider that a PlayStation game. I consider that like a – that's like, you know – you can find that
that's
on
for anything,
Nintendo 64. The Dreamcast had a Bust a Move. I mean, that's been on every system. Taito puts that out everywhere.
Jammer Lammy's on there.
Oh, I mentioned that one earlier.
And I mentioned Die Hard Trilogy's also on there as well.
Oh,
so.
Cool, very good.
But the top five, number five is Vib Ribbon. I don't even know if I'm saying that right.
So I have not played this game, but I have seen it, and I actually do own the PS1 Classic, and I have it downloaded on my Vita. That doesn't count for anything other than I've intended to play it because I have heard that it is one of the most underrated games. So.
Okay. Yeah, never heard of it.
Was that Japan only, maybe?
No. Maybe. It says released in Japan in 99, everywhere else in 2000.
Okay, no, so it made its way everywhere. 2000 release, sell, you know. Yeah.
Number four is Future Cop, LAPD.
Nope.
Don't know that one.
Nope.
Number three, this one I'm familiar with, but I've never played, Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver. I know the Legacy of Kain titles.
Yeah, see, that's another one that's multi-plat, though. That was on the Dreamcast, too.
Yeah, and it's sort of like Tomb Raider-ish.
Yeah, it's like Tomb Raider slash God of War-ish. Legacy of Kain was a cool, because it was like what Castlevania 64 wanted to be.
Yes.
But wasn't, so.
Yeah, number two is one that I think I may have played this, Parasite Eve 2, which is kind of like we talked about Resident Evil, Silent Hill. It's that horror type, same
Parasite
thing.
Parasite Eve, was a square role-playing game that maybe had some horror elements to it. They had a lot of role-playing games Square did. You could
they did.
Do a huge show on just that. And Parasite Eve 2, like a horror role-playing. Interesting choice.
Well, the number one game on this list is a Square RPG. It's called Vagrant Story.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that one. I was imagining the cover, but I couldn't remember the story.
Not played.
Yeah, I have. I played it a little bit. I remember burning it. As we were wont to do back then. I remember playing a little bit of it. It was pretty well received and so different from their other stuff. That one's out there on their different re-releases in the last console system, but I have not played too much into that. So
sure. So Brad.
Yes, sir.
Where are we going next?
Well, we are going to the one that a lot of people have thought about. So that is going to be the Nintendo 64. And we've already talked about in our timelines when that came out, and we were similar with each other there. In the sense that I kind of played it in 97, I remember playing it at like friends' houses, like right before we graduated. I remember playing like NBA Hang Time and stuff. And of course, Mario. And we will unpack Mario 64 and the Nintendo 64 next time. And and that'll be an interesting one. And we will try to get to all your wrestling games in there. It's going to be tough to balance, right? Because you want to probably put one in and talk about them all. I like to cheat like that. So we can cover the gamut.
I might have to.
Yeah, I may have to, too, now that I'm thinking about it. It's tough, man.
One that I don't know that everyone else would have.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which I've talked to you about.
It's that ECW game, isn't it? No.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Jordan, again. So, it was good talking to you. This is a great show.
Yes.
And we will catch everybody here real shortly here with our Nintendo 64 episode.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Please. Expeditions, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlacementNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceMation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceMation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceMation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We'll be right back.